Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
It's the Fry-Yay Cocktail, presented by Anna Glavinsky.
I've got a very interesting chat coming up for you. In the world of bodyguards, it says that you must be willing to lay down your life for the person that you protect. And David Roberts says that he found it easy to be willing for one of the most famous women in the world, no less than Whitney Houston. He was hired as her bodyguard in 1988 and spent years alongside her, witnessing her highs and her lows. She really does have a story behind her. And he's brought out a book of his memoirs. It's telling the untold stories of her, really. Intimate moments that they shared, I suppose. And the struggles as well that ultimately led to her tragic death. So it's going to be... I've had a curious face there. Really looking forward to picking his brains is basically what I want to say, because it's going to be an insight that perhaps the rest of the public would never be able to understand and see, even though she was such a public figure. So, long intro there, David, but I'm really excited to hear your story, and it's great to have you on. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yes, very good. Very good indeed. Nice day today here.
Where are you?
I'm in West Palm Beach in Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida. That's nice.
Yes.
What time of the day is it there as well?
It's 10:30 in the morning, and it's the sun is shining, and I think the high today will be in the mid-70s, so that's nice.
Oh, not bad at all. Well, good morning to you, and I hope you have a lovely day. Thanks for joining us. It's the afternoon for us. We're over here in Spain, broadcasting to all of Europe, and obviously we want to talk about your book. You have brought out memoirs about your life as, or a part of your life as, a bodyguard for Whitney Houston. That's mad. How did you end up getting this job in the first place?
By default, I actually didn't want the job originally. Right. I had a telephone call. When I left the police force, I worked for various embassies. Providing security for their dignitaries that were visiting, their Fortune 500 people coming from overseas to the United Kingdom, traveling through Europe, going back, and sending them home. And one of the embassies was the U.S. embassy. And for that embassy, I had a telephone call, as I did fairly regularly, a request to look after another one of their dignitaries. I said, well, who's this? And Mr. O'Brien, who's the head of security there, said, well, this one's Whitney Houston. I said, well, who's he? Americans have strange names, right? So he said, no, it's a lady. I said, oh, which corporation does she represent? Thinking again, this is another corporate 500 client. He said, no, you've been living under a rock. This lady is a pop star. I said, oh, no. Well, thank you very much. I don't do sex, drugs, rock and roll. Not interested. Thank you very much. Said, too late. I put your name in amongst others to be interviewed by the person negotiating for the security contracts for the United Kingdom. So I went to meet with Mr. Wallace Leprard, who at the time had been the former head of the FBI in New York, head of station. And he asked me during the interview, look, I want you to provide snipers. I said, for a pop star? Yeah, no, well, that's really not going to happen. Well, then, bomb dogs. Bomb dogs? In the United Kingdom? For a pop star? No, that's not going to happen either. So he said, well, how much would you charge me for these services? He said, arguably, sir, more than anybody else that you will interview today, but I thank you for the opportunity of doing so. So I left on good terms with Mr. Leprard, thinking I'd fulfilled my obligations to the U.S. Embassy also. And then 2 weeks later, phone rang and said, oh, David, you got the job. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. So then in the meantime, I'd spoken to my daughter. And I'd asked her, darling, who is this Whitney Houston person? And she said, oh, Dad, I want to dance with somebody. You can dance later. Tell me who this lady is. And she said, no, that's her number one record. So I went out to the local store. I think she's had two albums that time. I bought both. Went back to my office and listened to them. And, oh, my God, this lady can sing. She can sing. Voice. Good heavens. So I said, I was not quite the rock and roll type screaming, shouting, banging I was expecting. It was something far more subtle and far more pleasant to listen to. So I flew back from Paris April the 9th, I think it was 1988, and I met her off the plane. And from there at Heathrow, and from there we developed a rapport that just developed all the way through till 1995, October. Yes.
Wow, that's really impressive. And, you know, I've never had the opportunity to speak to a real life bodyguard. And it seems like one of these jobs that you see a lot about in films, very splashy, explosive, cars rolling all over the place. What sort of training do you need to go through? What is it the reality like of becoming a bodyguard?
Well, back in the day, I was extremely fortunate. I was a sergeant on the Royalty and Diplomatic Protection Department at New Scotland Yard. And we were exposed to training that had been evolved through and adopted by the Special Air Service with regards to the protection of dignitaries. Arguably, the difference being is that a soldier may be considered expendable to achieve the mission purpose. Police officers are not. So there was that kind of training and the differential, but with the same emphasis on it at the end of the day. Normally in an environment where the bullets start flying, the only people left standing are the bodyguards or the bad guys. So you've got a selection of targets in any event. And that was the extent of that training. But there were very few people, as I said, available in commerce at that time who had that level of training. So I was fortunate.
Yeah, that is, I mean, very, very highly skilled. But it also requires a certain mindset. Because as it says in your book, you have to be willing to lay your life down for whoever it is you're protecting. And I do want to talk a lot about Whitney. I'm very, very curious about your sort of insights to her. But you talk about how with someone like her, it became easy to have that feeling that you would be willing to actually risk your own life for her. How do you end up getting into that mindset? You know, you're potentially given, like as you've just sort of explained to me, anyone to protect.
To start off with, you don't interview me for the job. I interview you to see whether you're worth dying for. No wow. matter who you think you're interviewing me, but I'm doing the assessment myself. Will I take the job? Will I not take the job? If I take the job, your life will be protected. To sacrifice my own if necessary. And that's the way most people at that level in that profession think. To do otherwise is you're not really a bodyguard. You're just, you know, you're not there. You're not thinking. You don't know anything about threat assessment, risk analysis, advance work, preparation, getting the right people in the right place at the right time to make sure the wrong people aren't in that place at the time that you're there. So it is a rather intense scenario, and it's deserving of that consideration in her regards. When I first met her, she was shy, beautiful, very articulate, highly intelligent, and very easy to communicate with. And as you know, we ultimately developed a communication system that belied the need to use words. We could do it by looks or by touch.
Wow. And your very first meeting with her, I believe, was at Heathrow Airport. Right. And she made a strong impact on you? And did you have an immediate connection? Or is it something that grew over time?
It's something that grew along. The assignment was the important issue. And bear in mind, at that time, she was actually protected by another gentleman from the former FBI by the name of Larry Wansley. And he was an expert at his role in any event. So I was only ever playing at that stage a secondary role to moving them through the United Kingdom. As that tour came to a halt, they asked me to go ahead and do all the advance work to Europe for them as a continuation of their tour, which is what I did.
Okay. And how long were you with her entirely then? How many years were
entirely
you?
Entirely for seven and a half years, from April 88 to October 95.
And explain to us, what does that look like, you know, when you're protecting somebody on such a global scale? You know, you're going to very, very public events. She's very, very visible. A bodyguard isn't necessarily supposed to be as visible. You're more in the background. I suppose there would have been moments as well where you're having to protect her in quiet moments. I don't know, taking her to the supermarket. Would that be something in your job role, where she might get mobbed on the streets? Or just how does it work?
Not quite the supermarkets.
Right.
But certainly to the likes of Neiman Marcus and some of the stores. We even went to buy a car on one occasion. So there's a striving to be normal by most people who are in that position, where normalcy is something that is almost unattainable. Because once the machine gets hold of you and the wheels start to turn and to churn, then you're dragging along, and they're dragging you along, and you're holding on by your fingertips. You become just part of their infrastructure. And by that means, you're subject to what they would call the advantages of profitability and so on and so forth. But you really are a victim of your own fame. The price of fame simply is too high a price to pay.
Yeah. And obviously, I presume she loved making music. Did she continue to love making music the whole time, and singing? Was that her outlet? Was that what she carried on loving doing? Or did it end up just being something that she had to do because she was told to?
I think towards the end, and I mean beyond my time,
right,
it appeared visually and audibly to become more tedious. But at the height of her career, when I was there, that's what she did. And when she evolved into her gospel music, she left. She left us and she went somewhere else to sing that. We were just privileged to watch the journey.
Right. And what was it like being a bodyguard at some of her biggest concerts as well? What was the atmosphere like? How did she channel that energy? And what was your role?
Organizing the security of it, both at local level and within our own group, because we grew our own security department in any event. So technically, it's no different going to a massive 50,000 audience studio than it is going to the show in front of 100 people down in Manhattan. It's the same provisions all the time. It's just more of it in a larger environment, of course.
Yeah. And you obviously said that became very close with Whitney, but you also saw perhaps how isolated she was, or how she felt betrayed by people that she trusted. Could you expand on that a little bit, about how her relationships with people affected her and how it changed and evolved during the time you knew her?
Well, most of the people in her environment were friends and family. And it, again, you know, regardless of the family scenario, who you are, you have issues within family, with family members. It's one of those pressing things. Her situation was exacerbated by the fact that she also had corporate magnates pulling her in every which way and saying, you know, she had obligations to fulfill. And it was those obligations that I think ultimately started to take her down, and certainly she lost any pretense to normalcy because of that. Now, bear in mind, the film, the Bodyguard film, when that came out, she was pregnant. That was a vast, vast hit, the film and the song. And that increased the demands on her, and she had the baby a couple of months after that. Now she has to balance being a mother, being a wife, and being arguably one of the most wanted pop stars everywhere in the world. That's a tough call, right?
It's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure and pulled in many different directions. Would she open up? Was this something that you observed, or would she directly open up with you? Did you have any conversations with her that you could share that would maybe give us some insight?
I think the best conversation I had was actually after making the video for the Bodyguard theme, I Will Always Love You. We were in a cinema, an old, worn-down, run-down cinema in California making that video. And when she came out of there, she put her arm around mine as we were walking to her car, and she said, David, I'm pregnant. And that, I think, was one of the most joyous moments that I had had with her. And in that moment, there was something different about her too.
Okay, that's, very open, I suppose. And obviously, we've mentioned as well that you said she's a very kind-hearted person. Not actually a description that is often given to superstars. What is it that caused you to say that? What sort of gestures or personality traits did you notice?
Well, that was simple. She's a giver. She took nothing from anybody. She gave to everybody, but not only materialistic issues, she gave her herself. And ultimately that cost her dearly. Yes.
Yeah, you saw that it took a toll on her.
Hmm.
But you also mentioned that she had a tough side. So what is the balance between those two, that yin and the yang?
You never actually saw the tough side as a manifestation. It was just knowing what she had to go through, you knew she was tough.
Right.
So it wasn't like she's going thumping tables or throwing things around a room or being this diva thing. That wasn't her at all. She took things on and she dealt with them. But the pressure of what she was taking on drew out her toughness. But only for so much. You can only be so tough for so long.
Yeah. And I mean, you're clearly almost quite defensive of her. You've obviously got a lot of good things to say about her. Do you think there's any misconceptions out there about how she was seen compared to how you feel that she really was?
No, there was nothing bad to say about her. Not during my tenure. Nothing at all. She really was the nice person that everybody saw. Having said that, who you saw on stage was not the real person. So you see an act on stages, of course, that's what entertainers do. Yes.
Yeah.
But once she came off stage, she was just a young lady, a beautiful young lady. Every time she came off stage, she couldn't sing. She's hoarse because she'd given so much of herself on stage. But the next day, we do exactly the same again. It may be across a different dateline, but day after day after day after day, she'd go on stage, she'd come off stage, she couldn't speak. Next day, back on stage, singing again, came off stage, couldn't speak. That's the way it was. That's how tough she was. She could cope with that.
And did you feel a responsibility not only just to protect her life, but did you want to see her be okay? Were you, wanting to see her happy? It's just the way you come across, it sounds like that you felt like a lot of care for her. Not just a clinical, she must stay alive.
Yes, I did. I did feel, and I still do, because the whole purpose of the book was to dissipate the anger that I've been carrying ever since everything went bad and we lost her. You and I should be sitting here listening to her singing now. It's unconscionable that we're not. And there are people who are at fault for making that so. But be that as it may, yes, of course you cared for her. Everybody who was with her cared for her. The issue was, are they caring for her benefit or for their own as to what they could get out of caring for her?
Yeah. And your book, obviously you've just explained, you basically took the question right out of my mouth, what, your purpose for the book was to release some of your anger. So first of all, did it help? Did you get that cathartic response from it?
I mean, after all these years, almost four decades, it was cathartic to me. I've carried that burden. Not that I've lost it completely, but it's dissipated into a more understandable, acceptable and bearable situation for me.
And for what do you hope that readers will get out of this book? Obviously, you've put it out into the public sphere. It's not something you've just written privately. You want it out there. What do you hope that other people get from it?
Oh, I have a belief that anybody who reads that book will take from it something that they themselves can relate to in their lives.
Absolutely. Right. Well, I'm just going to find the full title of the book because it's got, here we go, Protecting Whitney. And then you've got the subtitle, The Memoir of Her Bodyguard. That's by David Roberts. If you've been charmed by this chat, as I certainly have, then please do go check it out. You can see it on the Talk Radio Europe bookshop or pop it into Google or find it in any decent bookstore. David, thank you so much for joining us this morning, your end, this evening, my end.
Absolutely my pleasure.
All right, have a lovely day. Goodbye.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.